You know the vibes. Welcome to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K24. It's myself, Mo Mutsi, and alongside me today is the one and only GM extraordinaire, Mr. Scott Perry. How you doing, Scott?
Man, I'm doing great, Mo, but not as well as you are, I'm sure. Your Celtics up 2-0. You feeling good right now? I know, my brother. So
man, I'm feeling real good, but the job's not finished.
No, not at all.
They got to go and steal one in Dallas now, which we know is going to be tough. But exactly. The Dallas Mavericks have got to win 4 of the next 5 games.
Yes.
Against an elite defensive team, right?
No,
This is why it's perfect to have you on the show today, Scott, because I wanted to start. We're going to break down the game in a sec. Mm-hmm. But you were part of the front office that put together that 2004 Detroit Pistons side. Mm-hmm. Now, we know NBA championships are typically won by superstar players carrying their teams, the Kobe's, the LeBrons, you know, the Michael Jordans of the world. But that Pistons side was almost unique in the way all 5 guys contributed. You had an elite defense. How much of a similarity do you see with this Celtics team to your 04 Pistons team?
Great question, Mo. I see a lot of similarity between the two because we were never overly reliant on just one player. We had an excellent starting 5. All 5 guys were very capable of having big nights offensively. All 5 guys totally committed to the defensive end, just like what you see with the Celtics. Got good contributions off the bench. So I love to see a team like this, and that's not overly reliant upon just one or two players. It's beautiful to watch. The game of basketball was built this way, you know, and the way this team is sharing the basketball in this series, the way Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have showed the maturity not to get caught up in all the noise about who's the best player and all this kind of stuff and just focusing on winning and making the right basketball plays, it is a great thing to watch. So, and I'll share one last point with you about it. I can always remember sitting with Joe Dumars early on in Detroit, and, you know, the Lakers were at the top of the league, and I will always remember him meeting with us and saying, okay, Kobe and Shaq are not going to walk into this building anytime soon. The Lakers got the best 2 players in the league. We got to figure out how to get 10 deep to go take on those 2. And that's what we did. And that's what you're watching with the Celtics. They're saying, okay, we're going to build a deep team. We're going to have an excellent starting 5. And I don't care what kind of stars you have on the other side. That's not going to beat 5 players, 5 top-notch players when they're playing well together.
Absolutely. If you guys missed the game, the Celtics won game 2, 105-98. And when you look at the scoring, Jaylen Brown had 21. Jason Tatum had 18. He also had 12 assists to go along with 9 rebounds. And Jaylen Brown had 7 assists himself. Derek White had 18 points. Jrue Holiday had 26 points to go with 11 rebounds. And Kristaps Porzingis gave him 12 points off the bench in a well-balanced scoring effort. Meanwhile, for the Mavericks, no one cracked 20 points aside from Luka Doncic, who had 32, 11 boards and 11 dimes. Kyrie Irving, he started the game really hot, right? Kyrie Irving in the first quarter, he had 8 points in the first quarter. He finished with 16 overall. And to be fair, Luka Doncic had, 23 points at halftime and only 9 points in the second half. The Celtics defense really locked in. PJ Washington had 17 points. Derek Jones Jr. had 11. Daniel Gafford had 13. And they got really nothing off their bench. Just 2 from Lively, 4 from Josh Green, and 3 from Exum. So where do you want to start by breaking this game down? Because this game for the Celtics, right? If you look at the shooting splits, the Celtics shot 10 of 39 from behind the arc. That's 25.6%. Celtics, when they shoot below 32%, 12 of their 20 losses this season in the regular season and playoffs combined are in games where they shot below 32%. And tonight they did that, but they managed to find a way to win. The defense really locked in. And this is the problem that the Mavericks have. Kyrie Irving in particular, another kind of low scoring game by his standards when we're talking about the NBA Finals. He's being guarded by Jrue Holiday and Derek White, 2 of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA, both second team All-NBA defense. It's really tough when you can provide single coverage. Even Luka Doncic, they'll live with single coverage on Luka Doncic and let him go get his and really shut down the other guys. The biggest mismatch, really, was obviously Luka was torching them in the second quarter. But aside from that, they started the second half by going to Gafford on post-ups because the Celtics have been using Tatum to guard the bigs of the Mavericks so that they can switch that pick and roll. Scott, how do you counter this? What do you do if you're the Dallas Mavericks? Because across all five players on the Celtics, we even saw Payton Pritchard holding his own defensively against Kyrie Irving. What do you do if you're the Dallas Mavericks here against such an elite defense?
Well, I tell you what, I think Dallas has to start moving the basketball a little more. There's such a reliance on Luka Doncic going one-on-one and holding the ball for, you know, 80% of the possession a lot of times. Now, look, that has helped get this team to this point. I get that. But you got to be able to change up. And what happens is people – the other players begin to stand around and watch a little too much and can't gain a rhythm when he is so ball dominant. So going back to Dallas, I would like to see them try to get some actions early in the clock, you know, run some guys off some screens, you know, maybe get Luka off the ball just a little bit. I know we talked about him needing to be on the ball a lot, but you got to get some more ball and player movement to get this defense really rotating more, because right now Boston is dictating how this game is being played really on both ends of the floor.
And I think, you know, with Luka having so much of the ball, I'm not mad at that because that's what he does. That's when he really flourishes. Right. But the problem for me is the off-ball movement, because the guys are, as you said, stood around watching Luka Doncic. We don't see any of the movement off the ball, so that when Luka can't find an avenue to score for himself, the Celtics know so well where he's trying to pass the ball and there's nothing happening off, you know, for the guys on the weak side, that they're getting themselves open. And I think that's really what they need to look at doing here. But conversely, on the other end, here's the thing. The Boston Celtics do something really interesting. It's a wrinkle they've been doing all season long, and you can see it in this series. They put whoever Kyrie is guarding in the dunker spot. Traditionally, you put the big in the dunker spot, which is a spot just underneath the basket. And that forces Kyrie Irving to be the help defender. And then they take their center and put him on the three-point line. So Porzingis or Horford's on the three-point line, which takes Lively or Gafford out of the paint. So when Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown beat their defender off the dribble, which is usually Luka Doncic just getting blown by, they get 2 feet into the paint, and then the defense has to collapse because Kyrie Irving as that help defender isn't going to block any shots. And then the Celtics can ping the ball out for a three, or they drive again and kick it out again. The Dallas Mavericks at some point have to stop this point of attack dribble penetration that the Celtics are able to come up with each and every time down.
Mo, you hit it on the head there, because as I watched the game, aside from maybe the first 5 or 6 minutes of the game, I thought they did a fairly decent job of defending some of the penetration of the Celtics. It broke down as the game went on. And there really was no worse culprit than Luka Doncic. I have to be real here. I mean, as great as he is offensively, I'm seeing him take a little some steps backwards defensively in this series. His body language on the defensive end is not good. When it's his turn to help, he's late, slow to help. He's standing straight up. He's not in a ready position to make a second or third defensive play on a possession. And that can become problematic when your best player's body language on that end of the floor, guys see it and guys recognize it on the, you know, see it happening on the floor. That's not something that emboldens your group, especially on the road against a great team like the Celtics. So it's Luka Doncic, in my opinion, is and to use Jason Kidd's words, has to become more of a consistent and active participant on the defensive end. It starts there. You talked about Kyrie having to guard the guy in the dunker spot. That's not a natural position for a guard really to be defending all the time. And that's, you know, kudos to the Celtics for putting, whether it be Drew Holiday or Derek White in that position. And they have the luxury because they have bigs that can shoot, and Al Horford and Kristaps Porzingis to lift them away from the basket. So it's going to start there really with Luka. Can he commit to a full game defensively? I know he's carrying a heavy burden offensively, but look, this is the finals. You've got the whole summer to rest. So if they're going to figure out a way to get back in the series, his body language and his commitment on the defensive end, in my opinion, it's got to get a lot better.
With Luka Doncic, right, to be fair to him, he is carrying a number of injuries. You know, he's got the knee sprain and he was questionable for tonight's game. He has something going on with his ribs. But do you think that the Celtics constantly targeting him on defense is wearing him down? As you saw, the second half of this game, his scoring was a lot slower than the first half. And defensively, his efforts got worse and worse as the game progressed up until kind of the final 4 minutes of the game where he tried to dig in and the Mavs went on a little run. Do you think that they're wearing Luka down?
Oh, I see him wearing him down a little bit for sure. And they are definitely targeting him on that end of the floor. When guys see that Luka has switched on to them, they're immediately putting their heads down and trying to get in the lane. You can tell that is a discussion point in the Celtics meetings. The players know that. They're going to continue to do that until Luka does something about it. And like I said, I understand he's nursing some injuries, but if you're lacing it up to play and you're in the finals, you got to put all that to the side and you got to at least be committed enough that you're going to give an effort, especially that initial effort defensively. I'm not asking him to dive on the floor every possession and, you know, take a whole bunch of charges and all that. No, stop the initial surge of the guy that you're guarding to try to keep him out of the lane. And if it is called upon for you to help on a drive or penetration, it was a drive late in the game, I believe was Jaylen Brown, I think, and Luka was right there to really step in and force a charge, bad pass, kick out, and he just kind of opened the gate, let him get all the way to the rim for a finish. So that is something that, as the best player, and that's your responsibility, that's gonna have to be addressed.
So what I find really interesting about sports fans is Luka Doncic is having great scoring outputs, but getting absolutely cooked on the defensive side. Jason Tatum cannot really score the basketball how we expect him to, but he's playing the rest of the game almost perfectly. But the narrative is Luka needs more help and Jason Tatum isn't a superstar. Jason Tatum, right? If you actually watch the games, is driving to the paint, collapsing the defense, and then making pinpoint passes to his teammates who are on the perimeter, creating opportunities for his team to score. Sometimes it's an assist, sometimes it's a hockey assist. He finished tonight with 12 assists, 9 rebounds, and a steal. He finished with 18 points in the end, but he was 1 of 7 from downtown, 6 of 22 from the field. But what he's doing and playing this team basketball and not falling for the comments Jason Kidd made and trying to prove himself as a scorer, he's playing exemplary basketball. And I just feel like, I don't know if it's the media or what's gone wrong with NBA fans, that they can't appreciate team basketball when they see it. And they're expecting the NBA finals to be one guy going out there trying to score 50 and his teammates only hitting shots when it's the end of the shot clock and he's picked up his dribble and he needs some help. This is perfect team basketball from Jason Tatum. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I love how Jason Tatum is playing, Mo. I mean, absolutely love it. He's aggressive. And the only thing that's not happening for him, the shot is just not falling consistently. But the difference of Jason Tatum this season and in this playoff run versus years past, he's not getting down on himself. To your point, he's driving that ball in there hard time after time and making the basketball play. Early help comes, he's making the right pass, which led to the 12 assists today. He's on the glass rebounding the ball. He's not hanging his head when he misses some shots that he normally makes. And then he's stepping to the free throw line and making, you know, he's drawing contact when he's driving hard to the basket and gaining points at the free throw line because he's an excellent free throw shooter. Love how he's playing. Now, do I think he needs to shoot a better percentage on the road for the Celtics to win one of those road games? Absolutely. But aside from that, I have no complaint. I mean, absolutely no complaint with how Jason Tatum is playing the game of basketball. And it just furthers what my point has been, you know, about him throughout this playoff run. He doesn't care. And I heard Shaq use this phrase. He doesn't care about useless titles, about who's the best player on the team and all that stuff. His focus is, as well as everybody else on that team, how do we win this NBA championship? Because once they win that NBA championship, you're forever recognized as an NBA champion. He's a, you know, first team All-NBA. He's an All-Star. Let all that other debate, you know, because that's for the media heads and everybody and fans to talk about. But he knows he will cement himself as one of the all-time greats in the Celtics uniform. And I'm happy to see him playing the way he is and persevering and pushing through, not, you know, shooting the ball as well as he's capable of shooting the basketball.
Now, when you get to the NBA Finals, the opposition has studied you enough to know what your best option is, and they try and take that away. And clearly, mm-hmm. the Dallas Mavericks are trying to take away Jason Tatum's scoring. Luckily for Jason Tatum, the Celtics have built such a complete team around him that it doesn't matter if his shot's not going, they can find a way to win games. On the other hand, Luka Doncic, the Celtics have said, we're going to let you score, but your playmaking in the first game, he only had one assist. Tonight, he had 11 assists, but guess what? He had 8 turnovers to go with it. You could see he was really mm-hmm. forcing some of those mm-hmm. passes. And it's a credit to the Celtics front office how they built that team in comparison to the Mavs, where you can see that they do have a weakness if Luka isn't able to consistently make those plays for his teammates. And that's not a disrespect on Luka. It's a mm-hmm. credit to the Celtics defensive scheme and what Joe Mazzulla has done with those guys. But you can see that when they take those options away, they're trying to turn Kyrie into a passer. And he finishes with 16 points. So, you know, it's about team building. It's about playing team basketball because teams win NBA championships. Even though we've seen certain players carry their team to an NBA championship, or when you think about it, you might. But when you actually go and look at the details, you might think Giannis having that huge game to close out the Suns in that final. But it's mm-hmm. the defensive contribution from Jrue Holiday, who was on that team, for example.
No question.
You know, it's Kawhi Leonard carrying the Toronto Raptors as if Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry and all those other guys didn't make huge plays in those games as well. But, you know, credit to Jason Tatum. He just knows that a ring will live forever.
No question.
The title of who's the best player on the Celtics, whatever, whatever. But I really want to give some credit here to Jaylen Brown. 21 points, 7 assists, 4 rebounds, and 3 steals. If you cast your mind back to the start of this season, or just under a year ago, everyone was laughing at the Celtics for giving him that contract. And if you think back even a little bit more than that, they were saying, oh, you should split up the Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown duo. You should trade him for Kevin Durant. You should trade him for Bradley Beal. But he's come out here and he's proved every single person wrong. So salute to Jaylen Brown, because through these first two games of the finals, he's been amazing. That final possession, Derek White got the block, but Jaylen Brown was right there. And then Jaylen Brown comes down the floor on the other end and he finishes with the layup with his left hand that everyone tries to criticize him about, finishes with the left. Mm. And that was the Mavs going on a 9-0 run to right. then extend the lead back out to 7 and say, you know what, let's wrap it up. We've won game 2. So I just want to give some credit to Jaylen Brown there, because I think he's a quality player, quality individual, and he's been criticized for far too long. And now fans and media are flipping the script from this guy's overpaid, this guy's overrated, this guy don't have a left hand. All of a sudden, this guy's the best player on the Celtics.
You know, there's a lot of credit to go around when you talk about Jaylen Brown's success, obviously starting with the player himself and the man himself. Jaylen Brown has improved each year in this league, especially on the offensive end. You know, he came in the league, he was not that strong of a ball handler, but his ball handling has really improved. And that's a tough thing to do when you get to this level. I've seen a lot of guys get better shooting the basketball, but I don't see a lot make this type of leap in terms of their ability to create offense off the dribble. And kudos to him. He's done that. He's worked hard. He's tuned out the noise. You know, you mentioned Brad Stevens earlier. Kudos to him and showing the patience and not listening to the noise about breaking up two excellent young players in Tatum and Brown, 25, 26 years old. These guys have been going to conference finals, and this is their second NBA finals. You don't, just because you've fallen short, you don't give up on two young guys in their prime that way. Now, if they were in their mid-30s, okay, then that's something different. But we're talking about two guys in their mid-20s.
They ain't even entered their prime share. That's the scary
exactly,
part.
Exactly.
This whole team's under contract for the next 3 years.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you know, kudos to them for having that patience and then just adding the pieces to it. And, man, when you – you know how good that Celtics organization is feeling tonight. And again, the job's not done, and I don't want to talk like the series is over, because it's not. It's a long way from being over. But you got to feel real good when you look out there as a front office and you see Jrue Holiday playing the way that he played. This, a game like today is why you go out and get a Jrue Holiday. Jrue Holiday is a winning basketball player. I heard the comment today during the broadcast that in the last 4 years, he has the highest win share percentage of any player in the league. That's
Wow, I
awesome.
didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. And so, but you can see why, because he's going to give it to you on both ends of the floor every single night. He's going to get key offensive rebounds, steals. He'll take a charge when needed. He's going to give up his body. He'll make open shots. He'll score like he did tonight, giving you 26 points. Whatever is needed on a given night to help his team win, this guy selflessly steps up and does it. And, man, he was awesome today. And it just tells you a lot about the Celtics. Game one, Kristaps Porzingis, quote unquote, the star of that game. Game two, you go to Jrue Holiday. And their top two stars just played consistent, tough basketball in both of those games, in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum.
You mentioned the commentators there, Scott, and I know you work for ESPN, so I'm going to speak candidly here, and I say this with respect. The NBA Finals, right? The commentary for the NBA Finals. Shout out to Mike Breen, legend. We know this.
Yeah, Mike Breen, true professional.
Now, JJ Redick is dropping knowledge, doing what he does. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Doris Burke. I think she's a true professional. Fantastic.
To see, you know, especially what she represents, the first female to be calling the finals, I think, in any sport. Yeah.
In any major sport. Yes.
Shout out to
yes.
Doris Burke. Mm-hmm. However, there is a part of me that really misses Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson. You know what I would give to hear? Hand down, man down.
Man down.
Do you know, like, Luka Doncic was hooking in the first half, and I just wanted them to go to a commercial break by saying, "Mama, there goes that man.
Exactly.
Like, bless Doris Burke, man. She tried it. She said, like, Derek Lively had that dunk, and they went to commercial, and she goes, "Lively, getting lively at the cup." And I'm like,
exactly.
That's not a bar, man. Come on, what are we doing here? Come on, Doris, I got love for you, but what are we doing here? But speaking of that, Lively dunk, right?
Right.
So in that just showed the importance of the centers guarding Derek Lively, Jason Tatum guarding Derek Lively, rather, because that was a possession in which there were cross match going back on defense. So Al Horford is guarding Derek Lively. Derek Lively sets the screen for Luka, and then Al Horford comes to the level of the screen. They throw two at Luka Doncic, who finds the pass for the Derek Lively dunk. And credit to Joe Mazzulla here, because he calls a timeout. And after that timeout, I think in the next 5 minutes, the Mavs only scored two buckets.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a real turning point in the game.
You know, kudos. And I said this after game one, that kudos to Joe Mazzulla when he started the series with making the big decision of bringing Kristaps Porzingis off the bench. And again, kudos to him again tonight. I'm seeing a growth in a coach, too. He's a really young coach in this league. He's had a ton of criticism come his way. But to his credit, he's kept his head down. He's kept getting better, you know, series after series. And he's been on top of his game in this series. You know, he's not allowing Dallas to get any huge runs against their team. When he sees something he doesn't like, he's stopping it. And that's what, you know, as a coach, when a game starts, you know, there's a few things you can do to contribute. You know, obviously recognizing matchups. You know, you may switch matchups during the game, how you utilize your bench, but how you utilize your timeouts, certain calls you may make. And at each point when he's had a chance to kind of interject himself in these first two games, I think he's done a really admirable job, a really solid job of that thus far. And he's going to need to, you know, still be on top of his game when they go on the road.
Yeah, absolutely. He's been coaching really well. I did get worried when the Mavs went on that 9-0 run towards the end of the game. But he trusted his team, and the Celtics were doing their traditional thing about waiting late and the shot clocks get going. But they pulled it out. One player I wanted to give a shout out to, Peyton Pritchard, made his first bucket of the finals here, right?
The banker, Scott, the long bank mode.
I was in the building in Golden State in 2022 when Jordan Poole hit a huge shot from down near the halfway line, which just took all the air out of the Celtics and really deflated them. Mm-hmm. Peyton Pritchard did that tonight. And this is the thing, he's been doing it all season long. If you watch all the Celtics games, I think there's no one better in the league than Peyton Pritchard at scoring from the halfway line when there's limited time left on the clock. is I don't know how much he practices it, but he is fantastic at it. He hit that shot, which was huge, you know, to give you that little momentum boost going into the break, going into the fourth quarter. But I wanted to really credit him on the defensive side because he's out there playing his tail off, guarding Luka and Kyrie. And Luke obviously has times where he scores over the top of him, but he's been doing a stellar job on Kyrie Irving.
Look, Peyton Pritchard, when he was coming out of college, the scouting report on him, okay, he's short, not the most athletic, but boy, he had toughness in spades. Tough, competitive young man. And that's why he's in the NBA. He doesn't have plus length. Like I said, he's not going to be more athletic than 95% of the guys he plays against. But he has a mental toughness. He's a very capable shooter. And he's going to give you everything he has on the defensive end and accept any kind of challenge that's put in front of him. And he's going to make you beat him. And that's why he's still with the Celtics, an important part of their bench, and probably one of the fan favorites there in Boston. I mean, he fits Boston.
He actually wanted to leave last summer because his role wasn't big enough. But after the Marcus Smart trade, they kept him on. I think they gave him an extension as well. We did see, though, through the game that Porzingis re-aggravated maybe the injury that he has, and he was limping, then he eventually went to the bench. Do you think, I don't know what his status will be for the next game, but let's say he's unavailable for the next game, and maybe even the one after. Do you think the Celtics can still beat this Dallas team without Porzingis? He was a team high plus 12 today, and we saw what he did in the first game as well. What do you think their chances are if Porzingis is injured?
Makes it a tougher job for sure, but they're still capable of winning. You know, they've got a two-game head start, if you will, in this series, being up 2-0, even though they just took care of home. But, you know, Al Horford is definitely capable enough for rising up and having a big game like Porzingis had. You know, I think the biggest thing that they'll miss from Kristaps, if he's unable to go, really is their rim protection. I mean, I know he can make the threes and the offensive production he gets. He's posting, you know, right up in the middle of the lane and shooting over much smaller defenders. And that's important and that's necessary. But look, the Celtics aren't going to shoot 10 for 39 again from three. They're capable of going on the road and shooting real, you know, 40 to 50% from three, have a big game there, and make up for the absence of a guy like
And they still Chris haven't Sals had a Jason Tatum scoring game either.
Yes, exactly. and you got to believe that you're set up for one or two of those where Jason Tatum, instead of being 6 or 22, was he tonight? Yeah. He was 6 or 22. To him being 16 or 22, you know. So you know one of those games is around the corner. That's the same as what we're saying on the other side for Kyrie Irving. You know, he's had two off-shooting nights.
The difference is Kyrie Irving's being guarded by two of the best perimeter defenders in the league. Yes. Jason Tatum is being guarded by the whole team when he gets into the lane. I prefer him getting into the lane and making plays than I would rather him do that than I would see him taking those sidestep threes that, you know, he likes to get to.
You know, and the tough thing, too, for Kyrie, he's seen so many different defenders come at him, so he's not able to establish a rhythm against just one guy. It's not like Derek White is guarding him for 40 minutes or Drew Holiday's guarding him for 40 minutes. It's both of those guys. And then you sprinkle in a little Jason Tatum and a little Jaylen Brown. Now he can't get the same kind of rhythm that he's used to getting against most teams most nights. So it'd be interesting to see what kind of adjustment Kyrie makes and Dallas makes in terms of trying to free him up some come game three.
Well, let's talk about a game three. If you're the Dallas Mavericks, I know you used to be a coach. What are the adjustments that you're going to make? We spoke about the ball movement, player movement kind of thing, but defensively, what are the adjustments that you're looking to make here?
Look, we're at the point of the series, and we miss our good buddy B.J. Armstrong on the show tonight. He was telling you, hey, it's time for man-on-man-on now. You know, the Jason Kidd is going to challenge this team. And look, if you guys want to win and become a championship team, you got to take it upon yourself, each individual. How are you going to keep your man that you're guarding out of the lane and breaking down our defense? That's going to be the challenge, because they started the game, you know, Boston, and I know we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when Dallas started going boxes and elbows defensively, you know, month and a half or so ago, and really shrinking the court on a lot of teams, and it was being very successful. And they started the game a little bit that way. But again, like I told you earlier, that started to break down and really dissipate after the first 6-7 minutes of the game. And so if they can't stay disciplined enough to that, it's still going to get down, no matter how good you are at staying, you know, at boxes and elbows, you're still going to have to defend dribble penetration one-on-one. And that's the challenge. I think you just challenge your ball club right now. I don't know that there's any type of scheme per se that you're going to give them right now, because look, Boston is, we've talked about this all along, they got the best starting five in the league. And as we've seen, game one, you had 6 guys in double figures. Game two, you had 5.
Dallas lost this game by 7 points. They missed 8 of their free throws. They were 16 of 24 from the line. Mm-hmm. This Dallas team has a track record of not being great at the free throw line. Why do you think that is?
That's a great mystery, Mo. I'm not sure. You know, a lot of times when guys miss free throws, especially guys that are good scorers, you know, like, you know, a few of the good scores they have on Dallas, it'll be a lack of concentration. And then you start missing enough of them, you get some guys that don't really want to go to the line because they've been missing too many. And then now they get a little gun shy going up there, you know, when it's just you and 20,000 people watching you try to shoot those shots. So it's a mental thing right now, as I see it, from that team, because that was costly for them today.
Yeah, and it was looking at it.
Because they had a chance to build a little bigger lead if they go to the line and make some free throws, and take advantage of the fact that the Celtics really struggled making threes. And Celtics had open threes tonight, too.
This
was the game for the Dallas to win on the road based on the shooting numbers of the Celtics.
Yep, and Dallas shot 6 of 26 from behind the arc. But when you look at the free throws, Derrick Jones made all of his, PJ Washington made all of his, Kyrie made all of his. It was just Luka who was 50%, Daniel Gafford who was 25%, and then Josh Green missed one. So it's really just those three guys there. But yeah, the Celtics rely so much on the three-point shooting that it's inevitable they're going to have games throughout a 7-game series. They might have 1 or 2 mm-hmm. games where they shoot horrifically, like tonight. That's the mm-hmm. variance of the three-point shot. You have to win that game. Like, you have to capitalize on it, because that's how teams have beaten the Celtics so far this season.
You know, the great thing, though, that I've seen with the Celtics in both games, even though they shot the three much better in game one than game two, it's been their persistence, though, at attacking the rim and getting into the lane. And in years past and games past, sometime when that three wasn't falling, you didn't see the same purposeful penetration to break themselves out of that shooting slump. There's a real purpose now. Look, they know they're a team that's built to shoot a lot of threes, but they also have a purpose now that we're going to be the aggressor and we're going to attack that rim regardless whether shots are going in or not. And they know in attacking the rim, either they're going to get to the free throw line, and they've got excellent free throw shooters. It's going to create opportunities for open 3-point looks.
19 of 20 from the free throw line.
For three point line, exactly. And it's going to and it creates open opportunities for teammates on the perimeter every night. So I've just been, you know, really impressed with their ability to stay committed, regardless of how well they're shooting it from the perimeter and attacking the lane, getting to the rim, being aggressive that way, and they've been rewarded for it in the first two games.
So I saw a really interesting stat. My guy Hoop Venue put this out. These are the list of the teams who had the number one offense and a top three defense in the same season throughout NBA history.
Okay.
Tell me what. Okay, I'm going to read you the list.
Okay.
1967 Philadelphia 76ers, 1971 Milwaukee Bucks, 1972 Los Angeles Lakers, 1974 Milwaukee Bucks, 1996 Chicago Bulls, 2017 Warriors, and this year's Boston Celtics. Every single one of those teams, except for the Celtics, but they're 2-0 up, and the 74 Bucks who lost in seven games, all of the rest of them won an NBA championship. These are historical numbers. So as much as I say the Celtics rely on a three-point shot, having that top three defense NBA,
it's huge.
It's historical they're doing this season.
Well, look, see that old saying about defense traveling? If the Celtics weren't a top three defensive team and weren't that good defensively, they don't win that game tonight. Their defense, and especially when they needed to be good and make adjustments on Luka, Luka got going early. But then they started, for the first time, running a few guys at him late. Or like you said, Al Horford a few times stepped up on him on screens and, tried to break his rhythm up a little bit after he got off to a hot start. But they are committed. All five guys at all time on the times on the floor are committed defensively to not only defending their man, but helping their fellow teammate when he may get beat by a drive or it's called for them to rotate, drop down, block out somebody else other than your own man. This is a total team effort, both offensively and defensively. And they're going to be tough to beat.
And speaking of team effort, I want to leave it with this. Jason Tatum, 6 of 22. The whole world online right now is criticizing him. He created 27 points tonight off of his passing. And Drew Holiday was the leading scorer for the Celtics with 26 points. Six of those were directly assisted by Jason Tatum. So there's more to it than the box scores and the shooting numbers. Yes. Scott, who's your prediction for game three?
Mo, I knew you were going to ask me this question. I think the Celtics is going to go in there and get this game three. I wouldn't have said this in the beginning of the series. I expect that, Dallas to bounce back. But just, some of the body language, like I told you earlier, that I watched defensively from this Dallas team, I didn't like. I don't foresee Boston shooting, 10 for 39 from three, even though it's on the road. But this is a very experienced team, and you got five high-level starters. So the whole adage about, certain guys shooting better at home than on the road, I think that goes out the window a little bit with the Celtics. Those guys are going to come to play basketball. And, again, experience is such a great teacher. I'm sure they're saying to themselves, look, we've been in – a position before when we were led in the finals. I think they were up, 2-1 against Golden State a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They know if they can go in and win game three, they know it's going to be a highly charged atmosphere in Dallas.
And it's a must win for Dallas. They're playing
and it's a must win from Dallas, and Dallas could play a little tight in that situation. You don't know how they're going to respond. You're the more experienced team. You're that much closer to getting your title. I just think they're going to really come in and put their foot hard down on that gas pedal and figure out a way to go in there and win game three.
And Jason Tatum averages more points on the road than he does at home in the playoffs throughout his career. So.
Yes. And they've yet to lose one on the road, right? In this playoff run, right?
Yeah, because the only games, they've only lost two games so far.
And they've both been at home.
Game two. Yeah, game two's at home. Yeah, undefeated on the road so far. And that's another, the last game they lost was game two against the Cavaliers in the second round, right?
Yes, yes.
So.
It'll be interesting to see what the Porzingis. I reserve a little bit of judgment. Even though I said I think they can still win without him. But if they have him going down there, I really feel pretty good about that projection.
Well, as you know, I'm not going to give you a prediction.
Mo, it's trending the direct opposite of what you predicted. And that's what we all know you truly want it anyway.
we're gonna roll with the Mavs in game three. I'm gonna predict that.
Exactly. We'll you gotta predict that. I scared you when I picked Boston in game three.
yep. I hope BJ returns after game three, because after the first two games, it feels like he's hiding a little bit. The comments online are all calling BJ a Boston Celtics hater, and I feel like exactly. He's hiding a little bit. I know if the Celtics win this series, he don't want to see me. He don't want to hear from me. It's going to be me and you rocking out the whole song.
Mo, I'm just going to ask you that. I know it's early, it's premature, but are you going to be at the parade if they win it?
Man, I'm trying to be. Just know I'll do everything in my power to be there.
We're a long way from that because as we always know, a series doesn't start until you lose at home.
Facts.
And so Dallas is served now. They've got two opportunities to win at home and even this series.
And if they take care of home court, the conversations completely shift.
All the momentum goes for the Celtics.
The Mavericks have all the momentum with them. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes a best of three. And you don't want to see a Luka Doncic in a best of three series.
Yeah, and then the pressure really ramps up on the Celtics.
Because they've been two wins away from an NBA championship before in 2022.
Exactly. That's what I said. They were up 2-1. Yep, they were up 2-1.
Man, I still have nightmares about that. But I appreciate you taking the time again, Scott.
Man, I enjoy it, Mo, as always, man. So we look forward to
game three.
Picking up game three.
Wednesday night, right? Game three?
Wednesday night.
Okay.
Well, that should be helpful. If Porzingis tweaked anything, maybe that's helpful too.
Yeah, there's more time to rest in the fight. And people wonder why there's so much time to rest. It's a lot of it is media stuff. A lot of it is time for the players to rest so that they can play their best when they're on the court. And also strategically, it gives them more time to review film and that kind of thing. So we'll be back on Thursday morning after Wednesday night's game, breaking down game three. Hopefully I'm still smiling. But you never know, Scott. Make sure you get some rest. Appreciate everyone who tuned in. Make sure you subscribe, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast from. Until the next one, you guys know what it is. Get buckets.